Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, where this week, instead of listening to one veteran start to finish, as we typically do, we're hearing multiple voices underscoring a common theme of gratitude. This week, our nation celebrates Thanksgiving, but when it comes to our freedom, do we really realize how much we have to be thankful for? Those who endured years, months, or even just weeks as prisoners of war sure do have perspective on it, and they're coloring our perspective today. When it comes to the infamous Bataan Death March in April of 1942, there were more soldiers from New Mexico on the march than from any other state. One of them was a man named Julio Barella. And even before the march started, things had gotten pretty bleak for Julio. He and his fellow members of the 200th Coast Artillery in the Philippines were undersupplied, ill-equipped, and had no hope of reinforcements.
We don't surrender until we run out of everything. We were starving, eating weeds and stuff like that in order to survive. And there's where the death march started.
Now, when you started that march, you had no idea how long it was going to go. And you're already starving, right?
We started at that march pretty weak. We were pretty weak then because when we were fighting, we didn't have enough to eat. First thing, we were getting only 2 meals a day, and then they cut us to 1 meal a day. And then after that, we didn't have anything to eat.
What kept you going? How did you continue on? Because I'm sure a lot of guys were falling by the side and probably getting shot or bayoneted, and you were seeing guys fall left and right. What kept you going? How do you think you survived?
Well, we used to hunt. We used to eat weeds and stuff like that. Then a lot of them died with malaria, and a lot of them with diarrhea, according to what they eat. See, part of them died in the death march, and then the other part died in concentration camp.
Did you ever think that you were going to die?
I thought I was going to die, but I just got to where I didn't care. It was just like this. See, I used to worry a lot about my folks, about my mother. I used to worry every day. And one day I said to myself, "Why hell, I'm nothing but a doggone stupid. I'm not going to worry about them because they're better off than I am. They're not having as much trouble as I am having. And the other boys, they feel the same way. We got to where we forgot all about our folks and about the living life. Maybe we were just lucky because when they surrendered, a lot of them died of starvation. A lot of them, they didn't have anything to eat. They were weak, malaria, dysentery, and all that. A lot of disease. Well, we got to where we didn't care. We used to help the ones that couldn't walk. By the Japanese, the ones that couldn't walk, they shoot them. When a man lay down and he can't get up, why, they shoot him. So if they were punish you when you were in concentration camp, they punish me and they knock me down. And then I have in mind that if I try to stand up and get up, I won't be killed. That's a lesson the hard way.
I'll say that's a great way to put it, learning the hard way indeed. And every survivor of the death march that I've interviewed over the years has told me really the same thing that you just did. No one knows exactly how many people died on the march. I've seen estimates of around 10,000 or so. And who knows how many died later because of what they went through on the march. But I know that you Americans helped each other, and you got a lot of help from the Filipinos, who, from what I've seen, statistically outnumbered Americans on the march about 7-1. But all of you were not only marching 61 miles through deep layers of dust, you really didn't have any kind of nourishment. How bad was it? How bad in terms of what you had to eat and drink?
They make us wait 3 days before they could start giving us a bowl of rice, just how much they can grab on a bowl of rice. And that's when the death march starts. They start walking without water. And then in concentration camps, we were there starving all the time that we were in prison camp. We never did get anything much to eat. And they were Filipinos that they would try to help us, give us food. They find out that that Filipino tried to help POWs. They would shoot them, burn their kids, burn their homes. They act like they were not civilized. We never have a dream that we was going to survive. We didn't never thought we was going to make it.
Do you remember how much you weighed before?
I weighed about 145, 150. But when I was liberated, I weighed 83 pounds.
Your liberation. You survived the march to Camp O'Donnell. You'd been in another infamous camp at Kabanatuan. They took you over to Japan on a hell ship. And in late August of 1945, the atomic bombs had been dropped. The war was coming to an end. And finally, your camp at Niigata, Japan, was liberated. What do you remember about that? What do you remember about tasting freedom again for the first time in more than 3.5 years?
We're very, very weak. Our mind was very weak, and our bodies very weak. We couldn't hardly do much work. We just hope and pray that someday the war will be over. We were working in a foundry. They never gave us a day off, so we noticed that it was a surprise to us that the Japanese said that we were going to get 3 days off, that we have to stay in camp. So we were anxious to hear the Japanese commander telling us that we have surrendered. And the American officer asked the Japanese, what happened? Nothing. You people won the war. The war is over. Now you people take over tonight. What the Japanese told the American commander, you take care of your prisoners, not to go out because they're going to get killed, because the Japanese don't like the American prisoners, and they're going to get killed if they go out of the camp. So better stay in the camp, so we stay there, you know, until the next day. Then the next day, they go three planes, and they drop us leaflets.
So they dropped some leaflets. They said, get out of the way. We don't want to kill you with the food we want to drop for you. And then you finally got to go outside of the walls of that camp. You'd been living in, I would imagine, and you have described what would be a bleak, seemingly hopeless world for so long, only praying that you'd make it out alive. So not to be too cliched, but did it feel like a dream come true or a prayer answered when you got to come home? What did that feel like?
Well, we had plenty to eat. Every place we go, we just give us something to eat and stuff like that. And the prisoners of war I have talked to, they feel the same way that I feel. They didn't want to talk about it. They got to where they didn't want to talk about it. That's funny. We do more talking now than we did before. We never did say anything because everywhere we go, we start asking us how many Japanese did we kill and all that. None.
How often do you think about the other prisoners of war who didn't get to come home? Do you ever think about that, about all the guys who died over there?
I dream more about them than I dream about my people, even today. Every day I remember about some of the prisoners.
Do you ever think that could have been you? Do you ever think about how you could have died there?
Yeah, surprises me that I made it. I sometimes don't even believe it. Being so long and I'm getting old and all that, I sometimes don't believe it. I made it. I don't believe it. I went through all that.
It's hard for anyone to believe it. That was Julio Barella from New Mexico, survivor of the Bataan Death March. Again, links to all the full interviews with these ex-prisoners of war at hometownheroesradio.com. Now we're going to go back to the European theater with Leonard Cosby of Tulare, California. He was in the 80th Infantry Division, got to Europe in late 1944, was captured Christmas Eve, actually, I guess the morning, Christmas Day of 1944, and was liberated April of 45. Along the way, he lost a third of his body weight, from 150 pounds to 98, with that wonderful POW diet of sawdust bread and turnip soup in Stalag 4B in Germany. I want to read for you something. You know, a lot of POWs save mementos from their time in camps. Mr. Cosby has a couple very unique souvenirs. One of them is a beautiful Christmas card. It says, Merry Christmas, 1944. And it was sent to his mother
back in California. It says, Tuesday, December 5th, 1944, Northern France. Dearest Mother and John, hope this finds you all having a nice Christmas and not worrying about Lewis and myself. It's like the chaplain said the other day when he was talking to us, it is never so bad, but what, it can't be worse. If it is God's will that we come back, then we will be back. All that we can do is hope and pray to God to see us through the worst. I will close wishing you all a Merry, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. With love, forever, Leonard. Boy, that's quite the statement that you made in there, huh? That it's never so bad, but what, it can't be worse. And if it is God's will that we come back, then we will be back.
And that is something that I think that you really depend on.
And you wrote this December 5th.
Right.
20 days later, you became a guest of the Gestapo, as they say. As you spent those 4+ months in captivity, is that something, that concept, that God would see you through this, something that you were able to hold on to help you get through that time?
I believe it was, yes.
How did that play out in the day-to-day? Because here you are, a 19-year-old kid, freezing your rear end off with nothing to eat. You're a captive at the hands of the Germans. How did you get through day to day? What were some of the things that you guys did in camp to keep your spirits up?
Well, we were busy out working on the streets, sweeping them and cleaning them up, and that took a lot of our time. Also, we would be visited by Germans who would drop in to see if we were all right and see if everything was okay. But other than that, that was about the extent of it.
And after experiencing life as a prisoner, seeing your freedom taken from you, to get back to a free America again and step foot on the good old USA, what did that feel like?
That was great, because I felt that I could get out and walk around and go where I wanted to go and do whatever I wanted to do without any hindrance and without any danger.
Do you think that your experience as a POW taught you things that you might not have learned otherwise? Did it change your perspective?
Yes, I think it did. And the fact that what it does take for you to survive on, and anything and everything above that is a luxury. I am just grateful and thankful for whatever I have and everything that I have and for the good family that I have and the offspring.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm thankful to have known people like Mr. Cosby and gotten a little taste of what they've gone through. It helps me see all the things that I so easily take for granted. Time for another break, but another prisoner of war's emotional story is sure to grab you when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Paul Everett's RV Country has 8 locations in 5 western states, including Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, right off the I-5, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. Over 55 years of experience serving the needs of RVers across the country and proud supporters of Hometown Heroes. Find a location near you by visiting rvcountry.com.
Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank, it's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly 250,000 EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 500 World War II veterans have gotten to see their memorial in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328.
If you're an RVer, you've probably heard about the new line of Grand Design fifth wheels, travel trailers, and toy haulers. What sets Grand Design apart is the long list of premium standard features you'll find on the entire line. You'll also find the largest selection of Grand Design RVs at Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states and online at rvcountry.com.